Please be seated. And we have no questions, so thank you. Sorry, it was good for us to check. Thank you very much for your evidence. We really helped. Thank you, Nick. And you're released. Okay, so moving right along, and you know we're going to get to your planning witness.
Yes, and that's that was the best guest had him coming on at some point this afternoon, so he's ready, and I think others in the room are too.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and I think we're just checking through to make sure that anybody else who might have needed him are also available.
Yes, okay. The list was quite long from memory. Yeah, the list from memory.
Long. But we look to have everybody in the room. Okay. All right.
So the next witness that I will call will be Mr. Wilson. And just as he's making his way up to the front, I've had a discussion with my friends over the morning tea adjournment, and I've offered to lead some further evidence from Mr. Wilson to see if I can tease out the differences between the different methodologies that have been put forward in a way to both assist the court and assist counsel. So I'll start with that after he's given his summary, and that may then avoid the need for any further questions by way of cross-examination or further explanation, or it might not, but it may assist with the task at hand.
All right, thank you.
Would you like to swear on the Bible or affirm?
Affirm.
Do you solemnly, sincerely, truly declare and affirm that in the matter now before the court you speak the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth?
I do.
You confirm that your full name is Simon Shield Wilson?
Yes.
And you are the Manager for Regulatory Data and Systems at the Otago Regional Council?
I am.
You have prepared a Statement of Evidence in Chief dated 7 December 2020 and
yes.
A Statement of Evidence in Reply dated 19 February 2021?
Yes.
And you have set out your qualifications and experience in paragraphs 2 to 6 of your Evidence in Chief?
Yes.
Are there any corrections that you wish to make to either of those statements of evidence?
There are, yes. Evidence in Chief, paragraph 25. The end reads, consumptive take greater than
that.
Just
pause.
Oh, sorry. The last line reads, consumptive take greater that than 5 litres per second. It should be greater than or equal to 5 litres per second. And paragraph 33 reads, any values below 0 litres are removed. It should be at or below.
All right.
So subject to those corrections, do you confirm that your statements of evidence are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and ability?
I do.
Now, I understand you have prepared a short summary of the key points from your evidence, a copy of which will be handed around. If you could just proceed to give your summary once those have been delivered.
So my evidence covers the technical input I had into the development of Schedule 10A4 of Plan Change 7. Along with Mr. Leslie, I was involved in the initial technical development of Schedule 10A4 and PC7 before it was reviewed by the Council's policy and planning team. The methodology in Schedule 10A4 was designed to achieve three key outcomes. A, to ensure that applicants are not allocated more than their current water allocation. B, to ensure that applicants are allocated their actual water use, and C, to provide a methodology which was simple to apply and not open for interpretation, allowing for a lower cost of processing applications for resource consents. These outcomes support the short-term interim nature of Plan Change 7. Schedule 10A4 uses water meter data collected by applicants in accordance with their consent conditions or the Water Meter Regulations 2010, amended in 2020, to calculate the actual rates and volumes of water used. Schedule 10A4 is an objective and certain methodology with less room for subjective interpretation than the approach previously undertaken by the Council when considering water permit applications under the existing water plan framework. My evidence outlines how the method will work in practice and addresses some of the concerns raised. Where an applicant's historic use is consistent, then the proposed Schedule 10A4 methodology will result in the applicant being allocated water reflective of their current use. If applied across the Otago region, the methodology in this schedule will result in a significant reduction in the paper allocation currently assigned to deemed permit and water permit holders, with allocation more closely reflecting actual water usage. And as a result of submissions, I have made or support a number of amendments to the methodology. So I recommended or support a number of amendments, and they are moving the date analysed from 1 July 2015 to 30 June 2020, amending the method for calculating the annual volume limit to reflect maximum annual volume as opposed to average annual volume, the introduction of Rule 10A31A, to allow a path for applicants with missing data, and amendments to allow for processing of applications where water metering was not required either by regulations or consent conditions. Overall, my opinion is that with the suggested amendments, Schedule 10A4 meets the outcomes set out above.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Perhaps if we could start by you explaining to the court your understanding about whether the methodology in Schedule 10A4 includes all of the steps that need to be followed for that schedule to be applied.
It does, yes, and it was designed to do so.
So there's no black box that sits out to the side of the plan. The steps are, or the intention was to include all of the steps in the schedule itself.
Yes.
And you're confident that the schedule in its current form includes those or captures all of those steps?
Yes, I think the only piece is where the data is potentially has gaps or there's missing data, which requires someone with understanding to look at that and spot that that's the case and that there may be a problem with applying the schedule and that 10A31A might be appropriate. But other than that, the steps for running through the method are all in the plan.
Now, you will have had the benefit this morning from the conversation with the court in relation to the differences between the alternative methodologies put forward by various parties in this proceeding. It would be of assistance to the court and to council if you were able to tease out some of the differences between the council methodology and the methodologies that have been put forward by other parties. And if it's convenient way to do so, it might be worthwhile working through the differences that you've set out in your evidence and reply at your paragraph 5 as the basis for describing and discussing those differences.
Certainly. So there is the issue around A, reliability of supply, which is effectively the Aqualink discussion. Aqualink being a model to allocate your water limits based on what you will need to maintain your your crops with a, effectively, as I understand Aqualink, you look at the area you're in, and that gives you a rainfall figure. You look at your soil type, then you look at what you're doing, and those three variables produce a final number. The key difference that I've identified in my evidence, I guess, is that Aqualink in and of itself doesn't deal at all with the available water in the river or the health of the river.
Does the Aqualink model deal with past or historic use?
So I think it's probably worth putting at this point that I'm not an expert in Aqualink, but my understanding is no, it doesn't. It looks at modelled need.
And what's your understanding about how that modelled need is incorporated within the current planning framework? Now, you may not, that may be outside of the scope of your expertise, but is that model being used at present by council?
So I think to just say it's outside the scope of my expertise, but I certainly discussed it with our consents team prior to writing my evidence to confirm that what I had in there was correct. My understanding is that they take the numbers run by one of the council's analysts of actual use, and for monthly and annual volume allocations, they look at Aqualink, and then they take the lower of those two numbers generally.
Sorry, say it again. You take, I didn't get that.
Take the historic use number,
yeah.
Take the Aqualink number, take the one that's lower, but only for monthly and annual.
Are there any other observations that you can usefully share in relation to the reliability of supply differences, or can you tease out perhaps where other methodologies are seeking to incorporate a reliability of supply component to the methodology?
I don't think there's a lot to add on reliability of supply. I think that the key point from my perspective is that it's Aqualink is modelled need and doesn't include what's available to use. So it doesn't, you know, you can model that you need 2,000 litres out of the river, but if there's only 1,000 litres in it, you're not going to get 2,000 litres to use, despite what you've written on the consent.
And just to be clear, the council's version of Schedule 10A4 doesn't include reference to modelled need.
No, it doesn't.
Moving on to the next topic, system efficiency. Can you describe some of the differences that arise with respect to this topic?
So there was commentary from and some other sets of evidence that the reductions that would come under Schedule 10A4 would cause systems to operate in an inefficient manner compared to how they do now. And my response to that is that Schedule 10A4 is designed to provide applicants with the water that they currently use, particularly and when we get into rate of take, it's in most cases comes up with a number which is higher than the 95th percentile that the council would generate under the current water plan, although I acknowledge that 95th percentile is a number generated in a report, not necessarily the final number that enters the consent.
So the intention when the schedule was prepared was not to affect the existing system efficiency?
Correct.
And to the best of your knowledge, have any of the alternative models that have been put forward sought changes to the methodology to capture the concerns raised, or are they just concerns raised without tweaks to the method? To the council method, in terms of understanding where the difference between the method lies.
So there is one set of, or two sets of evidence that include a specific set of recommended changes to the methodology. That's the, we call it the LANPRO method, which is largely replicated by Ms. Dicey, although with one or two differences. And I can run through the main differences if that's useful.
I think that would be helpful.
Yep.
And if we have the document, the
No, I haven't.
I was just.
We can go to our.
I'm going to refer the court to paragraph 30 of my evidence and reply if that's.
Okay.
Should we also have in front of us actually what LANPRO is seeking?
That's probably what I was looking
for. Yeah, it's okay. I just need to find that. So, rather than a brief evidence. Are you able to talk to, and you may not have it in front of you, but are you able to. Are you able to talk to LANPRO relief and ORAG?
I don't have it in front of me. I have the 1, 2, 3, 4, the 7 points that I believe are different from Schedule 10A4.
I just need to see it actually
sure.
Looking at the relief side.
Ms. Perkins' evidence, 5 February 2021.
I think we should all have a copy of this, David. We should have. Should be.
Thank you.
Which is an attachment to the evidence and an attachment to Ms. Davies' evidence.
Now, Mr. Wilson, do you have in front of you the version of the schedule with the marked up changes from Ms. Perkins' evidence?
I do. So the first difference would be contained on, there's no page number, but 10A4.1. Where on the second line you'll see the average actual maximum, the average has been removed. So for rate of take, they're suggesting taking the highest rate of take at any point within the period analysed, as opposed to the highest rate in each year averaged.
And in your evidence in reply, you explained why you did. In your evidence in reply, you explained your reasoning for why you did not accept that was an appropriate amendment. Can you just explain for the court your opinion in relation to that suggested change?
I don't think the change is necessary. If you take the highest single figure, then you're potentially picking up a one-off data spike, which is well above typical use. It's a more reasonable methodology to take the five highest points and average them, and with rate of take you've got a very large data set to work from, means that in order to get their current allocation, the applicant would only have had to have used up to their current allocation once each year.
Let's say that again.
So in order to get their current allocation, if they've used their current rate of take allocation at one point each year, then under the Schedule 10A4, they're going to get their current allocation back.
As opposed to...
I guess what I'm saying is that there's plenty of opportunity to get enough data points to get something that's representative, and if they are generally using their current allocation, then Schedule 10A4 will give them their current allocation.
That's if they're generally using it and it hasn't been a dry year or a dry series of years.
Yes, but again, even in a dry year, they only have to have got to that rate of take once.
Once.
If you can step through then to the next difference with reference to the Perkins, to Ms. Perkins' schedule.
Yeah, so it's probably then the introduction of a method for auditing the water meter data. And there's steps there around data gaps, which we should probably address first. So the currently under Plan Change 7, we say that if data gaps are identified as being an issue, then you go back to Rule 10.3. Sorry. A31A. So we recognise that data gaps can be a problem and will have an effect on the effectiveness of Schedule 10A4, but don't necessarily spell out a methodology for filling those gaps, whereas LandPro are recommending a methodology to fill the gaps.
And when you read that suggested methodology, actually I'll go back a step, so that the position from the council was to say insofar as there's a data gap, there needs to be some further interpretation of those gaps done, and therefore the new proposed restricted discretionary activity pathway was the appropriate place for that consideration?
Yes.
Whereas the methodology that Ms. Perkins is putting forward attempts to solve the data filling gap within the methodology itself.
Yes.
Now, when you read the suggestions for how the data gaps are to be filled, do you have any concerns around whether the way in which the gaps will be filled can be done in an objective manner?
I do, yes. I have two concerns, which I cover in my evidence in reply, around filling data gaps. The first one is that identifying gaps in data isn't as easy as it sounds, and you need on-the-ground knowledge to work out when something's gone wrong. So you can have gaps for a number of reasons. For example, there are water users in Otago who disconnect their meters over winter so that the pipes don't freeze and burst. You wouldn't want to fill that data gap. It is a data gap that is reflective of what actually happened. So you'd require, while the council's team can look at a set of data and go, oh, I think that's a gap, there's then a step that would require information from the consent holder. And again, I don't process resource consents, but I'd assume documentary evidence that would say why there was a reason for that gap and that it was actually a gap. Then I have concerns over the method that's been suggested for filling those gaps. So LandPro recommend taking the level of data at the start of the gap, the level of take at the end of the gap, averaging them and drawing a straight line in between, which might work if the gap was an hour or two, but if you're talking about weeks or months, then I don't think that's accurate.
So that's perhaps a question of appropriateness as opposed to whether you could objectively ascertain an answer from filling the gap in that manner.
Yeah, well, I guess the objectiveness, well, the subjectiveness comes into, you start getting into discussion over whether a gap is legitimate or not, and different people might make different calls on that. So, in the sense of this, I mean that there is a gap because of equipment failure. So water has actually been being taken, but the meter hasn't recorded it. But you then get into issues of equipment failures happen, and that's fine, but what steps have been made to resolve the issue? And there's certainly challenges that consent holders have in getting service providers to do that work, so it can take some time, but you'd want to start making a call on, I think in my evidence in chief I have someone with a 5-year data gap, for example, whether that's a reasonable data gap that you'd want to try and fill. And that's when you get into a subjective decision.
So is that a question about what is a data gap, as opposed to is it a data gap or is it something else?
So there's the first bit, which is it a data gap, as in has something broken, or is it just that while they normally take a lot of water in March, it was a wet March, and so they didn't take water in March that year. So there's the process you go through to say, yes, there's a data gap there. Mm-hmm. Then there's the process you go through to say, do we want to fill that data gap? And then there's the how do we fill it.
And so for an expert conference, and I don't know, there may be large agreement on some of these elements, but for the expert conference, the three questions would be, what is a data gap? What data gaps need to be filled? How should we fill the data gap?
Yep.
Or how should it be filled? That would be the sort of output
yes.
I would expect to see.
Yep.
So, and that's where the differences are also aligned with LAMPRO?
Yeah, I think so for this one.
Oh.
The question is, how should we fill the data gap, or is it, should we fill the data gap, and if so, how?
I think you can adopt a standard methodology for how you would do it, but the first question for each gap would be, should we fill it? And the question before that would be, is it actually a gap?
And that's where the disagreements are lying in relation to part of this.
Yes.
Yep, okay.
The next topic that you raise in terms of differences is treatment of exceedances. If you could explain where some of the differences lie with respect to that topic, that would assist.
Yep, I can. So we're looking at paragraph 7, or point 7 of the LAMPRO amended version. So the council's notified version of Schedule 10A4 takes exceedances that are within the margin of error of the meter and rounds them down to the consented limit, and anything above the margin of error is removed. LAMPRO are suggesting, if I read the words, consider whether the exceedance is justified by reviewing if these are because of faulty equipment, flooding or other legitimate issues.
So that would require, or would that require a subjective assessment at that point?
Yes. I'd also, if I can, while flooding, for example, might be a reason why you've exceeded your consent limit and a valid reason for it that you wouldn't take any compliance action on, I'm not sure it's something that you should use to bump your consent limit up.
So what is the question then? What question arises?
So the question, I think, is how exceedances should be treated.
Is it But the prior question is, what is an exceedance?
No, I think an exceedance is clear from the data. You have a limit of how much you're allowed to take. If you're over that limit, it's an exceedance.
And here we're just talking about rates of take, or are we talking about volumes as well?
You can happen for rates and volumes. It's much more likely to happen for rates.
So we know what an exceedance is. Mm. And then the next question is, so what is an exceedance? You can answer that, but the
yes.
next question is, for an exceedance, I don't know, then what? What's your next question?
Well, I think the how should exceedances be treated? So the council methodology is very simple. If they're over the margin of error, you remove them.
Yes.
You don't take them into account.
And all of your methodology is under an RDA rule, isn't it? But LAMPRO is under a controlled activity rule. Is that how it goes? How does it go? We've got a problem with data. You've amended the plan or proposing amendments to this plan change to introduce new policy and a rule, which is an RDA rule.
Getting into the planning side of things,
that's
but I believe so.
I think that's right. And then, but that's not, LAMPRO doesn't like that. Okay. How should exceedances be treated? Is an issue here that it calls for, the LAMPRO method calls for judgment or subjectivity? Judgment.
Yes. So exceedances are obvious to spot. They're a number above another number.
Mm.
But then they're calling for reviewing if these are because of faulty equipment, flooding or other legitimate issues. So you start getting into what is a legitimate issue in order to be considered in calculating your limit. It's interesting that faulty equipment is listed there because faulty equipment can produce exceedances many times a consented limit, which aren't actually reflective of taking at all. It's just the meter going haywire. And I, you know, my opinion is they shouldn't be included in a recalculation of a limit. But there's a subjective element there in that you're going to have a conversation about it.
Significance is it could bring up the historic uses.
Correct. So Schedule 10A4 with its current treatment of exceedances that's a backstop safeguard to guarantee that it doesn't come up with a number more than your current allocation.
Yeah,
if you start including exceedances, you might come up with a number that's more than your current allocation.
Okay, so the question about how should the treatment of exceedances under the methodology seems to be, at least between, LAMPRO, questions to do with whether there's an objective response or a subjective response required.
Yes.
Or both?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Does that topic in terms of treatment of exceedances capture the terminology that has been used in some of the evidence around legitimate overtaking? And I wonder whether you could assist with what that phrase is, how that phrase has been used.
So probably various different ways. So I think that the first element is, if I call it rather, actual overtaking. So some exceedances are reflective of when the water user has used more water than they were allowed to use. And some exceedances are reflective of equipment malfunction. So some of them don't reflect actual usage. So there's actual, and then there's legitimate in what might we want to consider if we were taking some exceedances into account versus what shouldn't we consider.
So when you think about what might be a legitimate overtaking, I wonder whether we might put a practical example around that. So a permit that authorises a maximum rate of take, you know, an instantaneous rate of take of 100 litres per second, yeah. If the margin of error on the meter is plus or minus 10%,
yes.
A take, say, at 105 litres per second would be considered to be a legitimate overtaking based on the margin of error?
So, yes, it's close enough that the meter can be inaccurate, so they might actually be taking it the rate of take, so you'd round it down to 100.
So the way that the council methodology works, that 105 litres per second in that example would be rounded down to 100 litres per second?
Yes.
And then just teasing that out a little further, if the take was above 110 litres per second, so beyond the margin of error on the meter, that data point would be removed from the data set completely?
Yes.
And again, that's where there's a difference in terms of how that exceedance is being used in the land probe methodology versus the council.
Yeah, so I think, if memory serves, what LandPro are arguing is that if the reason for the exceedance was deemed to be legitimate, then you would keep that data point in but round it down to the 100.
So this is your last comment is in relation to exceedances above 10% for water taken by within, so exceedances above a margin of error.
Yes.
LandPro, the basic proposition is if legitimate, whatever that means, LandPro would round down.
Yes.
Whereas exceedances above the margin of error, the region takes out the data set. And the differences between rounding it down and taking it out of the data set, why is that important?
So I think I've argued in my evidence and reply that generally speaking for rate of take, I don't think it will make much difference. I suspect that we use the same filtered data set for volume calculations. So I suspect what LandPro are looking at is the later volume calculations. So you're adding 100 litres for that. 100 litres a second stays in for the volume calculations as opposed to removing it.
And do you agree with them if you leave it in the data set, but round, albeit rounded down, if you leave it in, that's important for calculating volume? Or is that a thing that you need
I think
to
that's
test?
A question for discussion.
That's yeah. A question for discussion. Yep. Okay. So then that needs to be flagged as a question for discussion too.
Yes.
Because you could be having a big debate, you know, about nothing much at all, or you might be having a big debate about something fairly significant. Yeah. So what do you reckon that question would be? Is there any material difference in terms of either, I guess you'd keep it in rate of take or volumes, should exceedances be rounded down but left in the data set? Is that broadly the question? Is it...
Yeah, that could be a starting point for the question. It's
there'll be better questions.
Yeah. And the immediate answer will be that it really depends on the data set.
Mm.
Some of them have a lot of exceedances, some of them have very few.
Mm.
This might be a question for Mr. Leslie, but I'll see whether you can assist. Is the timing at which there is an exceedance an important consideration as well? So in terms of when during the year it occurs?
Generally speaking, no, under Schedule 10A4, but it does depend on the data set. So if you had a data set which had gaps for two marches and then an exceedance for a third march, and March was supposed to be their biggest month of taking, then it might have an impact. So you've got five marches to look at. Two of them are empty. One of them is well above the limit, so you take it off. Mm-hmm. And you've only got two marches left to look at, and if that's when they take most of their water, then timing could have an impact.
What about in the context of, say, a spike? So think of a maximum instantaneous rate of take, mm-hmm. and a spike on a meter occurring, for example, not in the irrigation season.
So again, that would feed the discussion around whether it was reflective of actual taking or reflective of equipment failure. So generally, when you're looking at these records, you can spot a pattern of what they normally do. But just because they normally do it doesn't mean they always do it. You know, could have been reflective of the pump breaking and going haywire in the middle of winter, as opposed to the meter recording a false thing.
The next topic that you move on to consider is the calculation of the rate of take.
Yes.
And if you can assist by highlighting the differences in the approach suggested again by LandPro and the Council's methodology and your opinion on those differences.
Yep, so I think we covered some of that. LandPro are recommending taking the actual maximum rate of take, so the highest single point of data across the period analysed. The Council methodology takes the highest point in each year and averages it.
So that can be converted into a reasonably sort of clear question of should the maximum rate of take used in any water year be used, or should the average maximum, or should the maximum rate averaged across the water years be used?
Yes.
And just to tease out the differences between those two situations, because it may well be that you simply can't resolve which it should be, mm-hmm. but analysing a data set might help highlight the differences in outcomes from applying those two different approaches. In terms of the work that the witnesses could usefully do, would it be possible to apply to a data set, a common data set, those two different approaches to examine the differences in output?
Yes, absolutely. That could be done relatively easily. I think my cautioning comment would be that there is no typical data set. So we could do that on a data set and it would demonstrate a certain result, but a different applicant might come in with a different set of data who would get a different result. So how you choose that data set would be the challenge.
Now again, it might be a question for Mr. Leslie, because he, I recall, had attempted to do some of that comparative analysis between the two methods using a common data set between the LandPro expert and the Council's data set. So I might explore that a little further with him.
Sure.
Anything else in relation to the rate of take?
No.
So we then move to the calculation of daily volumes. So what are the differences there with respect to the Council schedule and the LandPro schedule?
So it follows the same theme. The Council schedule takes the average of the highest day in each year and then averages them. LandPro takes the highest A across the entire data set, with the additional filter that LandPro are recommending leaving in some of the exceedances, which might push up that highest A.
So, and this is what you were talking about before in terms of the effect of the instantaneous rate of take on the monthly and then presumably the annual averages.
Yes.
Is there any is there anything else in relation to the daily volumes in terms of differences, or is it coming back to that key difference in terms of whether it's the highest or the maximum recorded or the average that we've talked about?
It's coming back to that key difference.
We move then to the calculation of monthly volumes. Are you able to highlight the differences in relation to that calculation?
So again, same as daily volumes. Council recommends an average of the highest month in each year. LandPro recommends taking the highest month across the data set.
If you got the copy of the Mr. Pelsenmaker's latest recommended amendments there?
Yes, the 19 February incorporating four March corrections.
Believe that I do, yes.
Yeah. So 10A3.1 is controlled activity resource consent required. Have you got that?
Yep.
If you come to 10A3.1.1, say 4, he seems to. Has he taken out the average maximum and replaced it with the limit? Or am I reading that incorrectly?
I think that is, rather than defining average maximum in the text, he's saying the limit as calculated in accordance with Schedule 10A4,
okay.
And then Schedule 10A4 will tell you that it's the average maximum.
Okay.
At
but you said the average maximum, didn't you?
Yes, it is. It is the average maximum.
So why has he crossed that out, do you think?
You'd need to ask him. I think it's possibly just simplifying it so that if any changes are made, they only need to be made in the schedule as opposed to earlier in the text.
Yes, I see the schedule's worded slightly differently. That's
okay. But that may be the reason then. I'm
sorry, Mr.
Thank you. Right, perhaps Mr. De Pelsmaker can assist with that
when
he's giving his evidence.
Yeah.
And we move then to the calculation of the annual volumes. And does that follow the same pattern in terms of the differences?
It does, with the exception that I agree with LandPro's submission on annual volumes and have recommended that we adjust the schedule to look at the maximum annual volume as opposed to... I guess the difference is when you're looking at annual volumes, you can't take the average maximum. It's either the maximum or the average. The notified schedule was the average. I'm now recommending we change that to the maximum.
Over any data set period?
Yeah, so the highest year. Yep.
Can you perhaps just tease out some of the reasoning behind that?
Yes, so you'll see the detail in Mr. Leslie's evidence, but effectively that in putting the methodology into practice, Council found that the average volume was being reduced significantly compared to what would be recommended under the current water plan, and that wasn't the intent, so we recommended the change.
So again, it's just a refinement to the methodology to ensure that the outcome is being achieved.
Yes.
Now, the next topic that you address is the topic of the complexity of Schedule 10A4. Are you able to explain or to describe some of the differences which have arisen between the Council's version of the schedule and the schedule being pursued by other parties?
In terms of what LAMPRA have recommended, that would be more complex, not less.
And when you think about complex, what do you mean there? So what is some of the additional complexity being added in that you are concerned about? And you may have already covered this territory.
Yeah. So there are points where you'd have to make subjective decisions, and then with data gaps, for example, if you decided that a gap should be filled and had a methodology for filling it, you would then have to do that, which is extra work on the part of the data analyst. And again, I should probably add that if we're talking about subjective versus objective, even with a methodology, that's somewhere. It's another place where two different people could come up with two different numbers.
So we've been through the topics in your evidence in relation to the differences in the method. And I'm going to come and ask you about the hydroelectricity issues you've addressed shortly, but stepping back in terms of the issues that we've worked through and having now looked at the marked up version and Ms. Perkins' evidence again, are there any other observations that you have in relation to the differences with a view to informing a question that might usefully be considered by the experts at the witness conferencing?
So I guess the other question that might usefully be considered is the period of data to be analysed. I think I've recommended a change, and I think LAMPRA are in support of that change, but Mr. McIndoe has expressed some concern about that period. So that would probably benefit from some conferencing.
And in terms of the Council's version of the schedule, can you just explain your rationale for the date period that you have selected?
Sure. So it comes down to the water metering regulations and when consents of various sizes were required to have water metering installed. That is Table 1, page 5 of my evidence in chief. In particular there are a number of consents where we've required metering before those dates, but that doesn't apply to deemed permits. Deemed permits will have metering requirements as of the regulations rather than on the individual permits.
Sorry, say it again.
So when a resource consent comes in, we might have taken a resource consent at 6 litres a second that came in 2014 and said install metering now. So that individual consent had to have metering installed before the regulations, but the deemed permits don't have that. They're all metered under the regulations as opposed to an individual condition on their consent. And given that a large number of the applications we're talking about under PC7 are deemed permits, it's safer to rely on the regulations than individual conditions.
And under the regulations, are they metered or not?
Depends on the size of the take. So all takes at 5 litres per second or over need to be metered.
Including deemed permits under the regulations?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. I think that. regulations apply to a water permit that allows fresh water to be taken at a rate of 5 litres per second or more, is the wording from the regulations.
So, deemed permits will have been required if they're taking more than 5 litres per second to have a water meter installed, whereas all other permits, that's probably a condition imposed on a resource consent permit. Is that what you're saying?
Depends when the consent was issued.
Yep.
So more recent consents will have it. Yep. Older consents may not. Yeah.
Okay.
And largely under PC7, we're dealing with older consents.
Yeah. Okay.
So coming back to Mr. Moore's question, so I've based it off the dates in the regulations because that's when we're most likely to get complete data sets.
So those are the dates by which every permit was required to have a meter, every permit above 5 litres per second?
Yeah, it scales based on the size of the permit. So larger permits had to have them installed earlier. And in fact, for permits between 5 and 10 litres, we won't quite get a full data set, but you still should get 4 years of data because they were November 2016.
In that context, does the lack of data for a year have any significant bearing on the output from the methodology?
Again, it depends on the data set. It's not ideal. Having the full 5 years would be better, but it comes back to if the use is consistent, then 4 years will get you fair numbers.
So that year just simply, it's not that it's fed in as a year of zero dragging down an average, it's just that water is simply disregarded and you're averaging over, say, 4 years instead of five.
Yes.
Any other observations in terms of differences or questions that might usefully be considered?
So it links into the term of data we should use, but the council's recommended looking at 5 years' worth of data, and some other experts have said if you have a longer data set, you should look at the full data set. So that's probably a question that could be discussed. And then, I don't know if you frame this into a question, but there's the issue around data quality. And again, a number of experts have raised what should be done if the meter records are inaccurate, but I'm not sure anyone's suggested an alternative.
And so that's not gaps in your data, that's something else?
Yeah, so there's a requirement that your meter needs to be accurate to 5 or 10%, but what happens if it's not? Or what happens if you have spikes, for example, that aren't exceedances? So you can get spikes that go over the limit, but if you get spikes that don't look typical, or periods that don't look typical but are within the limits.
And LAMPRO doesn't answer that, well, with this methodology?
I don't believe so.
And so this isn't data gaps, this is something else?
Yes.
It's a quite a large something else, isn't it, in this case? This is something else which could also come under the... is it something else that could come under the heading legitimate overtaking?
I think that the problem with data quality is that if data gaps are tricky to identify, then data quality issues are a lot harder.
Yeah.
So we've put some safeguards in to deal with exceedances. Mm. But if you start going down the road of the metering record that I've provided as per the regulations doesn't actually reflect what I did, what's your alternative evidence and how do you deal with that? I think could become quickly become a very big question, yes.
But it's your understanding that nobody's actually proposing to do something about that question?
I haven't seen that, no. Okay. It would be more that's been presented as a criticism of using water metering data at all.
Is there a question whether water metering data should be used at all? That's been seriously pursued by any technical witness and any planner?
I'm not sure I recall Mr. McIndoe's evidence to that level of detail. I know he prefers Aqualink, but I don't recall whether he goes to that level of a suggestion.
Evidence in reply, the final topic that you addressed was hydroelectricity generation.
Yes.
Now, are there any recommended changes to the schedule that have been put forward in relation to hydroelectricity generation in terms of differences that could usefully be explored?
The only one that springs to mind, and I'm not sure it's a discussion for the technical experts, was a suggestion that hydroelectricity be excluded from the method in the schedule.
So that's more of a planning issue than a technical conferencing issue?
Yes, I think so.
Now, we've spent some time working through Ms. Perkins' marked up changes, and those are the land pro suggestions. I'm just cognizant that there may have been some further differences as between the ORUG witness, Ms. Bright, and Ms. Perkins.
So Ms. Bright or Ms. Dicey?
It might be Ms. Dicey in terms of the track changes.
Yeah. The difference that I can recall, and I don't have Ms. Dicey's evidence in front of me, but...
We will give it to you because it's important that you see she's running.
So page 85 of Ms. Dicey's evidence.
Are you looking at the narrative text or the provisions that she's...
The provisions.
Okay, all right. Oh, yeah. Good. Page 85.
Yeah. So the last page.
Okay.
So Ms. Dicey in point 3 is recommending granting the lesser of the historic annual volume or the volume identified by Aqualink. to meet demand in 9 out of 10 seasons.
I'll just reread that. Yep. Yeah. So you think she's recommending the lesser of A or B?
I think so.
Okay. Well, I guess we can ask her that.
Yeah. I agree the wording is a little...
It's not right. Yep. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so that step wasn't included in Ms. Perkins' evidence. Ms. Perkins was take the maximum historic annual volume, and Ms. Dicey's is take the maximum historic annual volume or Aqualink, whichever is less.
I'm just going to make a note that this pertains to identify the rate and volume for policy. Here it's amending a provision of the proposed plan. And it's to take the lesser of the history of annual use or Aqualink.
Yep. I should note that step is similar to the council's method under the current water plan.
Just looking at, let's say, page 82 and 83 of the methodology for auditing water metering data in Ms. Dicey's evidence, it's not immediately apparent to me the differences between the council's schedule and the schedule as amended by Ms. Perkins, simply because it all appears to be new text, as in the differences aren't tracked in.
This is a Dicey amendment, not Perkins.
Yes, the Dicey. So there might be some benefit in Mr. Wilson taking some time over the lunch adjournment to work through some differences, because it appears to me that there are some differences here that we might usefully explore.
So one of the things that's not clear to me at all, I'm quite clear how Ms. Dicey differs from the Regional Council. I'm not clear how Ms. Perkins differs, Lampro differs. I'm not clear whether how Ms. Dicey differs from the Regional Council. Is she recommending a wholly new method, or is she recommending a method which is essentially the same as Lampro, but she's using different words to describe the same thing? And I wasn't clear about that. It doesn't really matter where this method goes in the plan. That's a legal issue, actually, for the lawyers. But is it the same as Lampro with a bit added on at page 85, or is it actually quite different from Lampro and again, different from the IRC?
So I can take another look over lunch. My initial reading of it was that it was the same as Lampro with a bit added on. I can certainly take another look at that.
Yeah, okay. I realise we're running into lunchtime now. Did you have any other questions on this? Because that's one of the big questions.
That was the last set of exploration in terms of just teasing out differences between what's been put forward.
And so, and this might have been what Mr. Winchester was getting at earlier. You know, one of the questions for us is that, you know, this is a method to implement
as part of the methodology to implement objectives and rules, objectives and policies. And so, does it matter which version of the policy or objective that you are going for in terms of coming to a resolution on this methodology? So, in other words, you know, given that the methodology is implementing something else, does that something else have to be sorted? And, of course, that's what the court was touching upon in its minutes, saying, well, what's the problem that we're working on here? Do we actually need planners in the room to get their heads around the scope of that problem? Or does it not matter? You know, that to the extent that there are differences between yourself and Ms. Perkins, perhaps, and Ms. Dicey, perhaps, it doesn't really matter what the objective and policy is.
I think it does matter.
It does matter.
Yes, and because I think that some of these recommended additions to the or amendments will be in the context of other objections to the plan change and might be written to support those other objections. So you need to know what the method is trying to achieve.
This is why we said leave it. But we can see what your problems in cross-examination is. But we have thrashed this question around the office. When should we be expert conferencing on the schedule? Both before you even issued directions, that was a matter that we gave a real hard look at, and then after we issued directions. But I can see the problems in cross-examining. Yeah. So how are you going to approach that question? What does it matter? Does it matter? Intuitively it should matter, but does it matter?
I wonder whether, as perhaps the first question, the experts should be articulating what it is, the objective or the purpose of the methodology as they understand it, because that may actually explain then the differences of position or opinion in relation to some of the questions we've worked through today.
Yeah, and again, it goes to the question of what is the problem that we're working on here? What is the outcome of this method?
And Mr. Wilson, he, in his evidence, and repeated again this morning, very clearly the purpose of the methodology from the council's perspective in terms of what the methodology was seeking to achieve. I don't recall reading an alternative set of outcomes from other witnesses in terms of what the methodology was trying to achieve. Now, it's not that there might not be differences, there may well be differences, but they don't appear to have been articulated sort of clearly and directly in a way where we can see that where the difference arises. And again, in cross-examination, that was something I was thinking I might usefully explore as a starting point. But I don't see any issue with having that as a starting question in terms of the conferencing.
So this, are you thinking this, in fact, could be something that the technical folk could say? If your desired outcome is X, this methodology. If it is Y, this methodology.
Yes.
Or, in fact, X or Y, it doesn't really matter. You know, this is the recommended methodology.
Yeah, maybe it comes together. I don't recall detecting or distilling from any of the evidence there was a difference in terms of wanting to achieve an objective and a certain methodology. But I might be wrong, there may be concerns or maybe differences of understanding in terms of what the purpose of the schedule is. And that just may provide the explanation for some of these differences.
Okay. What is the purpose of the schedule? And relative to that purpose, what are the outcomes, I guess, that we expect? And again, I'm not sure yet how Aqualink fits into any of this. I can see with the Dicey recommendations that there should be testing or against or comparison against Aqualink and pick the lowest of your schedule, or Aqualink is the way to go. And so that's also a question, whether that's...
The question of is the Aqualink guidelines relevant for calculating all of the different categories, or whether that's a test tool to compare against the methodology. So just I haven't explained it particularly well, but stepping back, the council methodology doesn't rely on Aqualung. It processes data and produces a result in relation to each of the different limits that is calculated. That's then an entry condition into the rule. The council consenting officer then has an opportunity to assess whether the amount of water which is applied for, even though it complies with the schedule, is still a reasonable amount of water in light of the proposed uses. And as I understand it, it's at that point that the Aqualink guidelines are being used, or that they are a tool available to be used to say, well, okay, yes, you're applying for this much water. Is it actually appropriate to use that amount of water for what you're intending to use? And that's picking up on one of the matters of control in the rule. And so it's not being used at the same point in time as the methodology to calculate those rates of take. It's being used to test whether the rates of take being used are appropriate in light of the use. So to frame that up in terms of a question for the experts for their conferencing, it may be a question of should the Aqualink guidelines be referred to in the methodology. And that conceptually, I think, is what Ms. Dicey is seeking to capture in terms of the entry condition, adding an additional overlay that the amount of water sought is reasonable in accordance with those guidelines.
By referred to, which you, Ms. Dicey is going further than that, though, because then it becomes self-selecting, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And so is that a question for technical people, or is that, I guess, it, I don't know, depends on the purpose of the schedule and the outcomes expected relevant to objectives and policies.
And I was going to put that to Ms. Dicey as opposed to a technical expert. Yeah. I think it's a drafting issue and how it's being used conceptually, not necessarily a technical issue.
Yeah, but it could be for the technical folk to talk about whether the Aqualink guidelines should be referred to at all in the methodology.
Yes, and that just may assist with the court's understanding about those guidelines and what they can and perhaps what they can't do.
Yep. Okay. All right.
So, subject to some further consideration of Ms. Dicey's steps, which Mr. Wilson will consider over the lunch adjournment, I think we're past quarter, but past 12.
Yeah,
so
we'll start again at 2.
We'll start again at 2. And we'll pick
you can have some lunch as well as doing some homework.
Thank
Sorry
you.
About that.
Thank you.
Did you have a question?
Yeah. Yes. In terms of the expert conferencing, one of the differences that seems to come through in the evidence relates to the way in which the assessments are made under the water plan. And we don't know, you know, the time frame for that, but presumably things will need to be assessed under the water plan, and it's that process that the technical experts seem to have disagreements on as well. I don't know, I've stepped into a different area.
This could be getting into that brief to come, which is your regulatory folk. Well, what are they going to be doing with these 500 applications?
Yes. So at the moment, the consenting team is required to assess under the operative water plan, and Mr. Leslie's evidence steps through how the council has put together a methodology to provide some input for the consent team's consideration, but through the lens of policy guidance. So in terms of the operative plan, there isn't a schedule that explains this is how you should do these calculations. It's at a much higher level of abstraction's not the right word. It's at a much higher level in the policy, and this method's been created to respond to the policy. And that's one of the gaps that Plan Change 7 is seeking to fill in terms of providing an objective methodology so that consent applicants know what pops out of the calculation. Whereas at the moment, there is a degree of uncertainty and some subjective input required to do that calculation. And so far as it's relevant to this proceeding, the challenges with that methodology are relevant to the question of whether the methodology proposed is actually objective and able to be ascertained objectively each time it's run. And again, Mr. Leslie is perhaps best placed to explain some of those differences. Mm-hmm. And that's then relevant for those parties seeking to say, let's just go back to the method that's currently being used under the water plan and somehow capture the essence of that in the schedule for Plan Change 7, which would have some complexities associated with reflecting all of those steps.
Mm. But my understanding was that there were differences between the experts and the way the water plan approach is being undertaken, and a lot of the evidence referred to that.
So insofar as there are differences in opinion about the current plan, I'd submit they're not particularly relevant to consideration of the method and its purpose under Plan Change 7. Those are arguments that will be had and presumably will continue to be had until such time as Plan Change 7 has made its way through the process.
So you're not suggesting that the experts should try and resolve those?
I'm not sure they can resolve the interpretation of the current water plan insofar as how that applies to applications that are currently in train.
Okay.
Mm. Maybe a bridge too far.
So we'll take the lunch and adjournment. Thinking by the end of the day, though, Council can confer over their laptops about a series of questions. I think we've taken some detailed notes as to what those questions might be, and to propose an agenda for the expert conference. Now, that may change, I don't know, change again when Mr. Leslie comes to the table, but we'll see. Yeah.
Yes, I think that should be able to be achieved.
Now, am I right in thinking it's Lampro witness, Ms. Perkins, Ms. Dicey, are the key contenders, if you like, with the ORC. There's nobody else out there.
As I understand it at this point, and other council might have a little assist.
Mr. Heller is the other witness that talks about methodology and the implications of it for community water supplies. And I note that neither Mr. Beasley or Mr. Wilson have discussed Mr. Heller's evidence. It's a slightly different but related topic, I think, to the conversation my friend has so far had with Mr. Wilson.
And I think you're right. And I think the agreement was that we deal with territorial authorities and hydro generators separately, so as not to confound and get bogged in with what are really a completely different set of issues. So we'll continue to do that with confidence that we've got time available for that, and we'll be talking to Mr. Dunlop when we can reach him as to when he will be available. So I'm also expecting the three parties will have technical witnesses at that conference. Lampro, ORAG, your client, and ORC will have experts. Check your availability of your experts, and we'll be in touch with you about TAs and hydro at a later point in time.
Afternoon, Your Honour. In respect of hydro, I just wanted to clarify a point that Mr. Moore put to Mr. Wilson. You will recall in Mr. Mitchell's evidence, he actually raises a number of issues with the schedule that aren't planning related, they're technical issues. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought I should clarify that because Ms. Stiles, the planner, relies on Mr. Mitchell in respect of his technical advice. So he does raise a number of technical issues that haven't been addressed by Mr. Wilson, Mr. Leslie, or Mr. Henderson. Mr. Wilson's evidence only addresses outages and a discussion around what is a non-consumptive take.
I will have to reread what Mr. Mitchell says, but are those issues that will only arise for hydro electricity generators, or are they just general issues actually as to drafting?
I think they're, well, if the schedule is applied to hydro, they raise problems for hydro.
But are there particular issues for hydro that would not arise for territorial authorities or, I don't know, irrigators?
They could arise for territorial authorities. For example, one of the issues, just not in order of importance, but unlike irrigation, hydro takes water at its maximum consented rate during the wetter months, where irrigation doesn't do that. Now, that might also apply to the territorial authorities in terms of water supply as well. may not, but it, so it's not purely a hydro-related concerns that he raises, but it, they are matters that demonstrate, in his opinion, why the schedule should apply to hydro. But I just thought I should clarify that Trustpower's position isn't purely planning.
No, I do want to have an opportunity to ask whether these are issues that, to explore with this witness, whether or not the schedule, the next conference can be confined to matters of interest to the primary sector with hydro and TAs to be dealt with separately. Or, yeah, how do you want to go with this?
Well, that's why I suggested to Mr. Moore. Sorry, Mel. That's why I suggested to Mr. Moore that hydro and the TAs be moved up the order, because if there is some appetite from the parties and the experts to exempt hydro, for example, from the schedule, then the experts needn't get into, or the Trustpower's experts need to get into the finer details around the schedule if they are exempted from that. So that's why
Did
I suggested that earlier.
Yeah. They don't need to get into the schedule if they're not...
If they're not part of it.
Yeah, okay.
If they are part of it, and at the moment the ORC's position is a little bit agnostic or with hydro, then Mr Mitchell does need to participate throughout, given the concerns he's raised.
Oh, you two can talk over lunch to see how you want to...
Well, I just thought I should raise it.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying.
It's not a correct characterisation that it's just planning related.
Yep, okay, thank you. 2 o'clock.
All rise.